it's been really incredible to be able to combine both my professional and my personal passions together and really see direct impact and all of the amazing good that we're able to do for the heart community.
Why would a heart mom work for a CHD organization? What would prompt a young woman to leave her career and work for the same organization? How does this organization help families affected by congenital heart defects or CHDs? Welcome to Heart to Heart with Anna. I am Anna Jaworski and your host. I am also a heart mom. My heart warrior is a 27-year-old pharmacy tech at our local hospital. My heart warrior was born with a single ventricle heart and is my inspiration. That's the reason I host this podcast. I'm very excited about today's show featuring a heart mom and a heart warrior. Today's show is entitled Kate, Sydney, and the Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation. And our guests are Kate Stacy and Sydney Philpott Strife. Kate Stacy and Sydney Philpott Strife both work at the Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation, a nonprofit committed to year-round support for children with congenital heart defects and their families. Kate is mom to 6-year-old Stella, born with hypoplastic left heart syndrome in 2015. She underwent 3 open heart surgeries at 2 days, 4 months, and 3 years of age. In her early months, she was hospitalized frequently with GI issues, but has been very active, happy, and healthy since her last open heart surgery. Kate and her husband, Adam, also have twins born via IVF, and Connor and Ellie are their names. They are 8 years of age. Sydney was diagnosed with a congenital heart defect 2 years ago at the age of 27. She was on a morning run with her husband Andy and dog Penny when she went into cardiac arrest. Andy performed CPR until paramedics arrived. Sydney was in a coma for 48 hours and needed open heart surgery. Although her recovery was challenging, Andy and Sydney are expecting their first child in January. Oh my gosh, that's so exciting. They will be joining us today to talk about their experiences working with the foundation. So welcome to Heart with Anna, Kate.
Thanks for having us.
Welcome to Heart with Anna, Sydney.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
Oh, I'm so excited to have both of you here. So we're going to start with having Kate in the first segment, and then Sydney, you'll join us in the second segment. And then I'll have everybody in the studio together in the third segment. So that'll be a lot of fun. So let me start with you, Kate. A heart mom, just like me. So you and Adam have a daughter, Stella, who was born with HLHS, just like my heart warrior was first diagnosed. So can you tell me about the early days of her medical journey and her surgeries?
Yeah, absolutely. As you know, it's overwhelming. I actually can't imagine doing this 27 years ago. So we feel fortunate for the science and medicine that's available and that we were able to be diagnosed at my 20-week appointment. And had the time to really prepare and wrap our heads around what we were going to face. But unfortunately, you really can't prepare for that scenario. You shared that she was only 2 days old when she went in for her first open heart surgery. And so at that point, I'd only held her twice and both times for just a couple minutes. And then after her surgery, her chest was left open for about 4 days and she was on a ventilator for 12 days.
Oh,
so
wow.
I spent a lot of time more recently thinking about how most newborns are really never put down for the first 2 weeks of their life. Their parents hold them and fight over holding them and want to sleep with them. And my daughter was held for a couple minutes the first 2 weeks of her life, which is really just unfair. And then sad, and thinking about her mental development just from the very beginning of life, how that maybe has affected her. And then we were just kind of in it for the next couple years. Her second surgery at 4 months old, and then obviously turning her over at 3 years old is a lot harder than even handing over a newborn baby that you have only known for a couple days.
I agree. The second surgery and then the third was so much harder than that first surgery because the first surgery for us was an emergency procedure. And like you said, you think you're prepared. I mean, we had a couple of days to prepare, but that was it. And you know, if you don't do this, your child is going to die. So giving them over is almost a relief because you know that you are hopefully going to get your baby back alive. But the second and third time, they've had a personality and it's so much harder. I totally agree with you.
It's terrible. It's really third surgery. I mean, I can say now, I was very depressed leading up to it. I cried all the time. I wanted to just run away with her and, or take her place or take any pain away from her. And I didn't know how to explain it to her. It was a lot. She was on a feeding tube. I don't know about your son for the first 16 months as well. A lot of kids that have single ventricle surgery have damage to their vocal cords. So she did not drink or eat anything for a long time.
Wow. No, I got lucky. I was actually able to nurse my baby. And that's something that so many people dream about. But yeah, I can only imagine. That just makes everything even worse. Because as a mom, what's one of the things that you want to do? You want to feed them. You want to nourish them. And then when they can't eat or they can't drink, like babies who don't have the problems that our kids have, it just exacerbates that feeling of helplessness and desire. Like you were saying, I wish I could take care of this instead. You know, I wish it was happening to me instead of to you, because you want to do everything for your kids. So it sounds like you had quite a journey. I'm shocked, first off, to hear that your baby was on a ventilator for 12 days of her life, because mine was on for 3. And it seems like now they only keep them on the ventilator for about a day and then they take them off.
Yeah, we were pretty unlucky there. Her Norwood actually went so well that they initially closed her chest, which is pretty uncommon for a normoid. Normally, they do leave the child's chest open for a couple days. But after about a couple hours of closing her chest, she developed a clot on her BT shunt. And so they had to have an emergency surgery, reopen her back up. And then we just had a couple scenarios where she just had a couple things happen. On Christmas Eve, she flatlined. I was in the room. So we just didn't get very lucky at first. But the second two surgeries, she would be able to get extubated right away. So it was that first surgery.
Oh, wow. That seems to be more common, that they extubate them as quickly as possible. Whereas, and I'm embarrassed to admit this, folks, I wrote this script a couple of months ago, and my heart warrior was 27. Now my heart warrior is 28. So we're recording this a little bit after my heart warrior's birthday. So yes, gosh, I'm feeling so old today. But yeah, 28 years ago, it was very common to leave the babies on a ventilator even longer than 3 days. So the surprising thing was they thought 3 days was quick. Over the last 2 decades, they've been moving more and more. Let's get those babies off faster so that we do less damage to their throats, because having that tube down their throat, it just puts them at so much risk for so many other things. So feeding tube, long period of time on the ventilator. Wow, that's a lot to deal with. So she has really given you quite an education about what it is to be a heart mom. Tell me about how she's doing now, because she's in first grade. She's in elementary school.
Yeah, she's amazing. I joke that she has a remarkable personality for someone that's never been told no. She is certainly spoiled by me and all my family members, especially in those first few years of life where we really didn't know how much time we were going to have with her. We had those scares. We had a lot of uncertainties. We just gave her everything that we could. And she's happy and she's funny. And if she wants to have a cookie for breakfast, that's fine. I didn't buy her a pony or anything, but I certainly do allow her a few things that I probably wouldn't have done if she hadn't been through everything she's been through. Developmentally, she's doing great. She's in first grade, on track.
And you said that she got off the feeding tube after 16 or 18 months?
After 16 months.
Mm-hmm. So you said she eats cookies. So does she have any oral aversions to certain textures or certain types of foods?
Not anymore. We spent a long time realizing that she was never going to sip from anything like a bottle. And now she, of course, loves babies and walks around feeding her babies. And I'm like, nah, kiddo, nice try. You don't know how to do that. But no, she doesn't have any more oral aversions. She did for a while. We had a lot of other GI issues with her as well. You mentioned at the beginning of the show, her favorite party trick was that she really threw up a lot for about 3 years to the point where she would know she was going to do it. We would just pick her up and hold her over the sink. And if we needed a quick exit out of something, there she was. But she's doing great. Reading, writing, just keeping up with her twin sibling.
That brings me to my next question. So you do have twins that are a little bit older than Stella. And wow, how are you doing it? What's it like to have twins plus a heart kid? That's a lot to deal with.
It is. So they were one when she was born. So having three kids in less than 2 years is something that I maybe wouldn't recommend. But were a little unique because they were so little. I went into every situation knowing they really weren't going to remember any of it. They don't remember her birth, her first two surgeries. They remember her third one because they were five. But they were just really little. And I didn't have that guilt of leaving kids at home knowing that they were going to be mad at me when I got back. They had each other, even in this situation. They're unique. A lot of siblings, I think, sometimes can be jealous of the heart warrior and scared for them and have all these other things that they've always had one another to lean on, which is really fortunate now at this point. And they're all kind of the same size, which is funny. Whenever we go somewhere, people are always trying to figure out like who's who and if they're triplets or if one's a playmate or a cousin. So it's really, really fun right now.
Tonight Forever by the Baby Blue Sound Collective.
I think what I love so much about this CD is that some of the songs were inspired by the patients.
Many listeners will understand many of the different songs and what they've been inspired by. Our new album will be available on iTunes, Amazon.com, Spotify.
I love the fact that the proceeds from this CD are actually going to help those with congenital heart defects.
Enjoy the music.
Home Tonight Forever.
This content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. The opinions expressed in the podcast are not those of Hearts Unite the Globe, but of the hosts and guests, and are intended to spark discussion about issues pertaining to congenital heart disease or bereavement.
You are listening to Heart to Heart with Anna. If you have a question or comment that you would like addressed on our show, please send an email to Anna Jaworski at anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. That's anna@hearttoheartwithanna.com. Now, back to Heart to Heart with Anna.
Sydney, you weren't diagnosed with a congenital heart defect until you were in your late 20s. Looking back, were there any signs that maybe something wasn't quite right?
Honestly, not really. There wasn't much to indicate that I had a CHD. The only thing we could think of is when I was born, my pediatrician did notice that I had a heart murmur. So they sent me in for an echo when I was a few months old, and that came back completely normal. Recently, my parents found a report from my pediatric cardiologist about the echo saying that I was a perfectly normal, healthy 6-month-old baby, had a great looking heart, and they didn't anticipate that anything would be wrong. Or really, I guess so we thought. So after that echo that I had as a baby, I continued on to really have a totally normal, very active childhood and young adulthood. I played sports all the way through high school and college. I was a big field hockey player. I did a lot of swimming. I actually ran a half marathon in college. I did a couple triathlons after I graduated. So nothing to really indicate that there was anything wrong, especially with my heart. And really that ended on April 8th of 2020 when I unexpectedly went into cardiac arrest on just a casual morning run with my husband, Andy. We were only about half a mile in, so it wasn't even a really long one when I just collapsed in cardiac arrest.
That just must have been so horrifying for your husband. How lucky are you that he was a paramedic? He knew exactly what to do.
Yeah, it was really amazing. We were both trained as EMTs when we were in college, and Andy very fortunately knew how to do CPR, but honestly had never used it until that day. He hadn't had a reason to do CPR in the field. So I can only imagine what it's like for your first time doing CPR and a real person being your wife who's in cardiac arrest on the ground next to you. So honestly, he's really the reason why I'm here today.
Exactly. I can't even imagine that. My husband was also a paramedic when we were newly married, and I actually got a chance to attend a competition with him that he went to with his partner, and they were able to win second place in the Texas State paramedic competition. And Wow. It was like seeing a different person. I mean, he was so in the zone. And I imagine that's what your husband had to do. He saw you drop and boom, he kind of went into automatic pilot, I'm sure, and just knew this is what I need to do. And it probably didn't hit him until afterwards. Oh my gosh, this is my wife and I could have lost her. Has he said anything to you about how traumatic that was for him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of PTSD that comes along with, I think, seeing anything bad happen to a family member. I know Kate and I have talked about that a lot, what it's like to be on the outside, sort of looking in on your significant other or a child or any family member or friend. And it's really tough to think about that and just to sort of imagine what it was like for him. Yeah. I always thought everyone focused on how I was doing physically, you know, how was my recovery? What's my prognosis? But people didn't really ask him, how is he doing? How is he doing emotionally? How are the people around me doing emotionally with everything that happened? So it's been really great for us to be able to talk about that and to work through it and spend some time actually addressing the mental health and emotional side of CHD that often doesn't get talked about enough.
I agree. I had a guest who taught me a term. I didn't even know what CTSD was, but continual traumatic stress disorder. And yeah, I think, Kate, you and I could have a very long conversation about that because we both know what that's like. But you too, Sydney. I mean, CHD totally changes your life forever. So you dropped on the ground, or your husband grabbed you before you dropped on the ground. He did CPR on you. You all were able to get to the hospital successfully. And then what happened?
That day in April was a really scary one for all of us because we really didn't know what was wrong. We didn't know why I was going into cardiac arrest. And everything was cast in the shadow of the COVID pandemic. So things had really started ramping up, especially here in St. Louis, just a few weeks before that. So there was a lot of concern, especially as I was going into a hospital, what that was going to look like. And because I had gone into cardiac arrest, I wasn't properly regaining consciousness. So when I went into the hospital, they placed me into a medically induced coma. And then I underwent a cooling protocol to help protect my brain so that I could help maintain that brain function. So while I was in that sort of state, my medical team went to work trying to figure out what went wrong. And it's honestly pretty incredible how quickly they all worked because a lot of the things, you know, my husband doing CPR, how quickly I got to the hospital, how quickly they put me into the cooling protocol, those are all the reasons why I'm really here today. But while I was in the hospital, I ended up getting a transesophageal echo or a TEE, which is where they put the tube down your throat so they can see the back of the heart. And that's when I was finally diagnosed with a sinus venosus ASD. So when they did a regular echo, like I'd had when I was a baby, you can't see the ASD that I had. You have to do the down the throat, behind the heart view in order to really be able to see it, which is really incredible and very rare to have something like that and to have no symptoms leading up to, you know, in my late 20s when I had cardiac arrest.
Especially since you were so physically active. I mean, if you had been like me, I was a bookworm. I was not the one who was running a half marathon or running up and down a field playing sports like you did. So it would be normal that it wouldn't be picked up on me. The most stressful thing I did was I was in marching band, and that was stressful sometimes because I live in Texas and it got really, really hot. But I mean, you were stressing your heart a lot. And you never felt faint, you never felt nauseous, and they never heard a heart murmur on you after you were cleared, which is
amazing. So I guess after age two, they never heard a murmur again.
This really scares me because, I'm going to try not to get too emotional here, my granddaughter had a heart murmur when she was born, and after 6 months, they said they didn't hear it anymore. But Kate, you know what I'm talking about. This is scary. Because you're always waiting for that other shoe to drop, you know?
Yeah, I didn't disclose this, but my son Connor, my 8-year-old twin boy, he also has a very small heart murmur and a bicuspid aortic valve. So we do follow once a year.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Sorry, Sydney. That just hit me. That just really hit me because you want to think, oh, the murmur's gone. Everything's okay. and for you to be as physically active as you were, and wow, so for this to happen. Okay, so it took a TEE for them to identify this condition. They did, and knowing that it could cause problems, they said, I'm sorry, you need open heart surgery. I'm assuming. Or were they able to do it in the cath lab?
Yeah, so not to freak anyone out, most heart murmurs do resolve. So I don't want to cause any panics. What happened to me is very rare. I'm one of two people in known history to have the only symptom as being cardiac arrest. So,
oh, wow. Okay, that's reassuring. Thank you. Yes, that's very reassuring. That's reassuring. It is.
Hopefully that's reassuring. But yeah, my ISD was actually large enough that my doctor said they could pass a quarter through it. So while they wanted to resolve it in the cath lab, it was too large to do that. So I ended up needing to have open heart surgery. While I was under, they ended up closing a PFO that I had as well, just to be extra safe and secure in there. And so I also ended up then getting a pacemaker and defibrillator placed so that if I were to ever have cardiac arrest again or any other concerns, I wouldn't need to have my husband constantly by my side ready to perform CPR, but I would be good to go. But the likelihood of that is thankfully very low. There's no expectation that anything will continue to be wrong.
Wow, they weren't taking any chances whatsoever. So of course, you know, the next question I'm going to ask you is, what concerns do they have about you having a baby?
Yeah.
If any.
Well, I was extremely lucky. A lot of things went right for me, as I've mentioned, my husband being there, my incredible medical team. I'm really lucky that I don't have very many restrictions now as an adult. Even before getting pregnant, everyone expects I will go on to live a long and very heart healthy life, which is really amazing. And like you said, absolutely overjoyed to be expecting our first child in January, a little girl. Before we got pregnant, we did have to do some additional preconception checks with my cardiologist. I saw high-risk OB just to make sure that we knew what we were getting into, if there were any concerns about me carrying or giving birth, anything like that. Unfortunately, we got the green light. There was no restrictions to me getting pregnant and carrying the baby and delivering as I would like to. So I do have some extra visits throughout the pregnancy. I do see a maternal fetal medicine specialist. I do also see a cardiologist, of course, throughout my pregnancy. So I get some extra echoes done throughout pregnancy. I get to see the baby a lot, which is really great. I just passed the 20-week mark, so very excited to find out that baby has so far what looks like a perfect heart, which is very exciting for us to get that news. And I don't anticipate any concerns with delivery. I'll just have some extra monitoring, spend a little bit of extra time in the hospital. But other than that, I'll pretty much be like anyone else having a baby, which is really amazing. And my husband and I feel very lucky to have such an amazing support system. We have such a great care team, of course, that I had while I was in the hospital and then throughout my recovery and now into pregnancy.
Anna Jaworski has written several books to empower the congenital heart defect, or CHD, community. These books can be found at Amazon.com or at her website, www.babyheartspress.com. Her bestseller is The Heart of a Mother, an anthology of stories written by women for women in the CHD community. Anna's other books, My Brother Needs an Operation, The Heart of a Father, and Hypoplastic Left Heart Syndrome, a handbook for parents, will help you understand that you are not alone. Visit babyheartspress.com to find out more.
Heart to Heart with Anna is a presentation of Hearts Unite the Globe and is part of the HUG Podcast Network. Hearts Unite the Globe is a nonprofit organization devoted to providing resources to the congenital heart defect community to uplift, empower, and enrich the lives of our community members. If you would like access to free resources pertaining to the CHD community, please visit our website at www.congenitalheartdefects.com for information about CHD, the hospitals that treat children with CHD, summer camps for CHD survivors, and much, much more.
We learned in the first two segments that both of you have incredible stories to share. This has just been so amazing. But in this segment, I want to learn about the foundation that both of you ladies work for, and it's called the Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation. So, Kate, first of all, can you tell me a little bit about this foundation that brought the two of you ladies together?
Absolutely. So the foundation started about 10 years ago by Mark and Jen Hinkle. They lost their son, Ollie, to complications from his CHD when he was 13 months old. At first, they didn't start out thinking they were going to have a foundation. They just wanted to raise money at his funeral for CHD awareness, like many other families who unfortunately lose their children. And then once it got bigger, they started the foundation really on the guiding principle to spread love and take their love for Ollie and share it with others, to take the things that maybe were missing from what they needed when he was alive and make sure that's provided for heart families today. And now here we are. I actually met Jen when I was inpatient with Stella after her first open heart surgery. She was born around Christmas. And they were serving meals to all the heart families at the hospital. So Jen was the first one to even call me a heart mom. I didn't really know that that was a term that people use. And we became best friends. And fast track to 6 years later, here I am. I'm sure a lot of people call you a unicorn because you have a 27-year-old with HLHS. And so being around heart moms that have survived this long and can be role models is really, really exciting for me.
You are absolutely the first person to call me a unicorn. I love it. My granddaughter would love that. She loves unicorns. But yeah, I guess I don't consider myself a unicorn only because I have so many friends whose children are even older than mine, which is really exciting because those friends gave me hope that my child would make it. So, wow. So you met the founder and she served you a meal. How touching is that? I mean, when you break bread with somebody, that's almost the easiest way to become fast friends. Food, you know, food and friendship. It just comes together. Don't you think, Kate?
It does. That's a very commonplace in our office, too.
Oh,
in Champaign.
There you go. Well, Sydney, I bet you never expected to work with a foundation like this.
Definitely not. My background is in public health, and I was working on the corporate side of things when my cardiac arrest and CHD diagnosis happened. And it really gave me a chance to take stock of what was important in my life and sort of reevaluate my priorities. And so I actually also had a meal with Jen Hinkle, our co-founder and executive director. She has an amazing way of bringing this community together and connecting with people. And we ended up having breakfast almost to the day a year after my event. Oh, and after hearing about all the amazing work happening at the foundation and everything that she had on the horizon, I knew I had to work for Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation. I ended up sending her an email afterwards and just saying, hey, if you ever have an opening, please let me know. And she ended up saying, if you ever want to work here, please let me know.
Oh, my gosh.
And the rest is history. I've been here for about a year and a half now and have, of course, had the chance to work really closely with Kate and the rest of the team. And it's been really incredible to be able to combine both my professional and my personal passions together and really see direct impact and all of the amazing good that we're able to do for the heart community.
Right. I think it's so rewarding. I don't really consider what I do work. Of course, I don't get paid for it either. So maybe that's part of it. But I leap out of bed in the morning. I can't wait to get to work and do what I do because I know that what I do can directly impact people in a positive way. I think it's fantastic that you left the corporate world and decided to work with a nonprofit. And it's so valuable what we do. I don't think people realize how it's really a win-win situation because when you're doing something like that, it makes you feel good. And of course, foundations need people like you who are passionate and really understand what it is that that organization is trying to do, which is what really impressed me when I sent Kate a message and I said, okay, on my website, I list all the different services. Usually a nonprofit will say to me, okay, I do one or maybe two or three things. Kate said, we do it all. I said, oh, so Kate, tell us about some of these amazing programs that you have with the Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation.
Sure. Yeah, I have the best job in the world. I'll just say that. I serve as the outreach and community partnership manager, but I also really work directly with the Hart family. So my team calls me the fairy godmother to all the Hart families in our community and throughout really the country. But our mission is really to address the unmet needs of Hart families while transforming the future of pediatric care. And to do that, our vision is that every Hart child and family will be wrapped in love to eliminate the traumas endured by living with a chronic illness. So small goals, really, Anna, is what we're doing.
I was going to say, that sounds so perfect. Oh, wow. That sounds so lovely. Okay.
So whether it's like a financial grant, financial assistance to families, we know that the burden of being inpatient can take a toll on a family. You're often taking off work, deciding whether or not you're going to take unpaid leave, the medical bills pile up, travel to the hospital, things like that. We really love to offer to families that need assistance. And then obviously this peer-to-peer support. I just had coffee with another HLHS Hart mom this morning.
Oh, wow.
Talking about outreach in the community. So I love to meet other families. We plan events for families in the area. And then I think Sydney can really speak to our mental health program called Ollie's Branch.
So Sydney, you're the director of programs. So what are the top three? Because now I know that the Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation does a lot of different things. Just tell me about the top three programs that you want my listeners to know about.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we think about our programs, we always talk about them in three categories that we describe as addressing those holistic needs of the heart community. You heard Kate talk about our mission and our vision really about addressing those unmet needs. We think about those in three categories, one being basic needs, the second being psychological and social needs, and the third being around outcomes and impact. Kate talked a great amount about our community outreach program and all the amazing work that we are able to do in that, providing individualized support in all of those different capacities. And then Kate touched on our second main program, which is what we call our flagship program, Ollie's Branch, which is a free and trustworthy mental health program available for Heart Warriors and their families. So parents, grandparents, siblings, other primary caregivers can access free therapy support through Ollie's Branch. And our main goal is removing barriers to accessing that care. And that's available for the Heart community across the U.S. So we're really, really proud of that program and all the amazing support we've been able to provide.
That's amazing. And then our third, and I know that Dr. Corinne Smora, who was on my show recently, that she's actually working with you all, which how awesome is that, that you can have a Heart Warrior providing mental health services to the CHD community. I just think that's amazing.
Yeah, she's been incredible to work with. She's one of our 90 plus therapists that are supporting the Heart community right now. And she's been truly phenomenal, a great resource. Her experience, both professionally and personally, also are really amazing. And she's been a great resource. So I'm glad that she was also on the podcast and everyone got to meet her as well. Mm-hmm. And then I would say for our third program, hits on that outcomes and impact section that I mentioned, which is around technology and research. So we're really focusing on cutting edge advancements through things like supporting innovative care at home and less invasive treatment while someone's inpatient, and also smarter care. So what are the things that we're able to do that are really making a direct impact and improving the lives of the Heart community in all of those different settings?
Oh, wow. That's amazing. I didn't expect you to tell me that program. I was expecting for you to tell me about the program that you have for bereaved families. Sadly, a lot of my friends are not as fortunate as the three of us have been. Can you tell me a little bit about the program and the support that you have for those families affected by CHD that don't have the outcome that we want?
Yeah, so for bereaved families or those that have a heart angel, which is often how we refer to them, we can provide a couple different pieces of support. One is through, like Kate mentioned, some of our case-by-case basis could be around financial support for funeral costs or things like that. We also do a lot of work in peer-to-peer support, connecting our bereaved families together, whether that loss happened during a pregnancy or after the child was born, during a surgery or inpatient stay. And then also our biggest component is providing them support through Ollie's Branch. So Okay. Bereaved families are also welcome to participate in Ollie's Branch to receive that free mental health support. It exists for a lifetime, whether your heart warrior passes away or they are continuing on and rocking at life. We continue to have that support available because once you're a heart family, you're always a heart family.
Exactly. I love that. Rocking at life. How do you like that, Kate? I love
that's
that.
That's how I would describe Stella.
Exactly. That's how I would describe my heart warrior. I can't believe we're out of time already. So I have one last question for each of you ladies. And that is, if you could tell my listeners only one thing about the Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation, what would it be? And this time I'm going to start with Sydney.
Thanks, Anna. So you touched on this a little bit earlier, but OAF is a unique organization because we really want to meet the unmet needs of the heart community. And we've taken really actionable steps in our programs to address those needs, really having things that are available that hit on all of those components. We don't believe in this concept of siloed care. We really see that we make the greatest impact when we work together. So we love connecting with other nonprofits or other organizations, other heart parents, other heart families, so that we can really grow and make that greatest change together.
Oh, I love that. That's amazing. Okay, Kate, what would be your one thing?
Well, I could talk about OAF all day long, but the most exciting thing we have coming up right now is our annual virtual conference, which is called Take Heart.
Yes.
And that took place on Sunday, October 2nd at 2 p.m. Central.
I already signed up.
Oh, good. I'm so glad. The conference is free to attend for heart families and clinicians. And it's really a space where we bring together the heart community, families, and then clinicians and present information about what's new and cutting edge in the heart community, discussing topics this year around mental health and siblings and dads, a panel on fertility and reproduction in heart warriors. It's just a great opportunity for families to be on the same field as physicians and learn, but also advocate for their heart warrior in a place where they're being heard as well. So we're really excited about that. Again, it's free to sign up. It's taking place on October 2nd. It's virtual at 2 p.m. Central.
As soon as I found out about the conference, I signed up. I got my confirmation, so I should be good to go. But I love that. And we'll put the link in the show notes, which is a description of the show, friends, so that you can just click and you can register for the conference as well. I think this Ollie Hinkle Heart Foundation is just amazing. You abbreviate it OAF? OAF?
We do.
OAF.
Okay. Okay. I hear OAF. I think OAF, but OAF, OHF. Okay. I got it. I hope everybody will join us at OAF, and we're going to have a great time at the conference. It should be a really interesting experience for us. Some of these virtual conferences are almost as much fun as meeting in person, but the nice thing is October is cold and flu season, and you don't have to worry about being exposed to so many germs or driving a long distance or getting in an airplane with a lot of people who may be germy. So having a virtual conference in October makes perfect sense. Thank you for offering that to all of us, to the whole heart community, free of charge. I think it'll be awesome. Thank you, Kate, for coming on the show today. I really enjoy talking to you, and I have a feeling there will be conversations with each other in the future as well.
I hope so. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Sydney. You are such a lovely and poised young lady.
Thanks so much, Anna. It was great being here.
It was so much fun talking to the two of you. I could have talked to you all day long. This has been amazing. I would like to thank all of you for listening today. If you enjoyed this episode of Heart to Heart with Anna, please take a moment to drop me a line on Facebook, Instagram, or my website to let me know what you liked about this episode. And remember, my friends, you are not alone.
Thank you again for joining us this week. We hope you have become inspired and empowered to become an advocate for the congenital heart community. Heart to Heart with Anna, with your host, Anna Jaworski, can be heard at any time, wherever you get your podcasts. A new episode is released every Tuesday from noon Eastern Time.